Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, last talk for today is Professor Gabriel Wollner, who is professor of practical philosophy at the University of Bremen and works at the intersection of political philosophy, social philosophy, and ethics. He is interested in what we call analytical Marxism and goes also back to critical theory tradition and is writing a book on socialist action. He is appropriately enough ending the day with a talk entitled Revolutionary Redemption and the Socialist Afterlife. So, thank you.
Thank you, Leah. Thanks, everyone. We have talked about socialist values. We've talked about socialist institutions, socialist policy at the intersection between liberal egalitarianism and a socialist perspective. My talk is about something we haven't talked about so far, namely about socialist emancipation, socialist transformation, class struggle. And I think there is a perspective on class struggle from the socialist tradition that contemporary socialists and liberal egalitarians should take more seriously. This is about revolutionary redemption and the socialist afterlife. This is part of an overall conception of Marxism and socialism that I like. It's not that conception of Marxism and socialism. It's Marx plus Elizabeth Anscombe. Leah mentioned the project is called Socialist Action. So I think Marxism and socialism has something to do with acting, properly. So here's in a nutshell the overall project. I think one should combine analytical Marxism with philosophy of action, in particular Elizabeth Anscombe's philosophy of action, and that helps you rescue or recast certain insights from non-orthodox Marxism in maybe more convincing ways than it has historically happened, and it also gives you a particular institutional vision of libertarian socialism. I think underlying this is a neglected perspective on socialism. The point and purpose of socialism is to enable a particular kind of free and rational joint action, acting with others in a way such that what we are doing together is my free and rational action. Not only mine, but ours. I call this ideal the ideal of socialist action. I think this ideal of socialist action supports Marxist theory of action as objectification with others. I think there's the plausible reconstruction of the alienation and reification critique of capitalism in there. I think you get the commune and the council as the institutional realizations of socialism. But I think there's also a take on socialist emancipation in it, about which I want to talk today, namely revolutionary redemption and the socialist afterlife. So the claim for today is that we can rely on this idea of socialist action, I'll say a little bit more about it in a minute, to defend Walter Benjamin's view about socialist emancipatory politics, the view that Benjamin develops in on the concept of history from 1940, where Benjamin suggests that through our struggles today, we redeem the revolutionaries of the past. This is the idea of revolutionary redemption. And on my reconstruction of that idea of revolutionary redemption, it matters that our afterlife is in fact a socialist afterlife. But let me say a couple of things about this ideal of socialist action, which I think is at the heart of the socialist project, but also at the heart of an attractive reconstruction of the Marxist project. The bottom idea is it matters to act. It matters to perform first personal actions. When I perform a first personal action, I know what I'm doing without observing myself. I deliberate about what to do. I occupy the first personal point of view, asking the question, what's to be done? I think performing first personal actions is of moral significance. Put very abstractly, it allows me to relate to features of the world as reflecting my engagement with reason. I think there's an idea of freedom in there. There's an idea of rationality in there. Performing principled actions. I think performing these actions gives me self-knowledge. I know myself as an agent. I arrive at a practical identity, at a description of myself under which I can value myself. There are certain deliberative norms associated with this. I should treat factors as beyond my control, which are only those which are really beyond my control. And I think they're deficient actions, right? Failures of actions when I predict my own future action instead of deciding what to do in light of the reasons I have, I fail as an agent. Now, I think it matters that we perform such actions, first personal actions, also when acting with others. Many actions we perform are complex actions, right? The dinner making, whether Italian or French, involves many different steps. Joint actions occur when these different steps are performed by different individuals. Somebody is boiling the pasta, somebody else is making the salad. A socialist action is an action where a joint action where individuals perform different parts. A socialist action is an action where a joint action is at the same time my individual first personal action. I am doing what we are doing. I can relate to our action as my free and rational action. I think this is also of normative significance. When we're performing a socialist action, we can relate to what we are doing as reflecting our engagement with reason. I think there are analogs to freedom, collective social freedom, collective versions of rationality and self-knowledge. And I think this idea of socialist action can be used to explain why producing under capitalism is alienated, why when producing institutions under capitalism, we're performing deficient actions, we reify our social relations. But that's just the background machinery. What I'm more interested in today is what kind of ideal of emancipation comes with this ideal of socialist action. And I think one interesting perspective on this, one among others, is that we should think of emancipation as socialist action taking place over time. So I think there's a conceptual perspective in this and a normative perspective. A conceptual perspective on how we should understand emancipation as a temporally extended joint action, and also a normative perspective about what matters when we emancipate ourselves. So the conceptual perspective is socialist action happens over time, even spanning different generations. The normative perspective is, I think, that it matters that when we engage in emancipation, what we are doing today can be understood as completing a socialist action that has begun in the past. And I think this is how you should think of this idea of revolutionary redemption. We're completing a socialist action that has begun in the past. We're bringing a process of emancipation to its end. And it also matters that we can view ourselves and what we're doing today such that what we are doing can be completed by those coming after us, completing our socialist action. It matters for what we are doing today that what we begin or continue can be continued further by those who come after us. And this is how the socialist afterlife enters the picture. Here's the structure of my argument. I want to talk about Walter Benjamin a little bit. I want to take this influential idea from Western Marxism and I find it attractive, but also puzzling. I want to explain why. And then I want to draw on a different thinker from the tradition of liberal egalitarianism, that is Samuel Scheffler, who argues about the significance of a collective afterlife. I think he gets the story half right. I want to offer a modification of Scheffler against the background of socialist action, and then put the two together and say, once we have the modified version of Scheffler, Benjamin suddenly now makes much more sense, and we get a convincing version of this idea of revolutionary redemption. That's what I want to do. So here's Walter Benjamin on the concept of history in 1940. So Benjamin introduces this idea of revolutionary redemption. The central claim that Benjamin makes is that the revolutionaries of the present may redeem those whose struggles have failed in the past. So he thinks of class struggle, of socialist emancipation, as a redemptive and rescuing intervention into the past. I think this gives rise to a problem almost immediately, a philosophical problem almost immediately, which is why I say I find his position puzzling, namely the question of how can what we are doing today have an effect on the past? I mean, the past is gone. How can our action today have an effect on the past? And how can we redeem individuals who are no longer alive? So here's a quote from Benjamin from On the Concept of History. Benjamin says, there's a secret agreement between past generations and the present one. Our coming was expected on Earth. Like every generation that preceded us, we have been endowed with a weak messianic power, a power on which the past has a claim. Such claims cannot be settled cheaply. This gives rise to further problems. How are we to think of the idea that past generations have a claim on us? What reason, if any, do we have to act for those who came before us? What's the normative source of this claim that the past allegedly has on the present? And likewise, what's the power? What power do we have to redeem the past? Right? What's this messianic power that Benjamin talks about? And how do we exercise it? What can we learn from this about socialist emancipation? Benjamin then also says, of course, only redeemed mankind is granted the fullness of its past, which is to say, only for a redeemed mankind has its past become citable in all its moments. Even the dead will not be saved from the enemy if he is victorious. So there seems to be the idea of mutual redemption. So but by doing something for the past, by redeeming the past, we're also redeeming ourselves. How does this work? Reciprocity across time. Benjamin speaks of the past becoming citable in all its moments. We get full access to the past. What is going on here? And what does he mean when he says that even the dead will not be saved? I mean, how can somebody be harmed who is already dead? So Benjamin on revolutionary redemption, puzzling, yet also somehow attractive idea. Forget about Benjamin for a second. Here's a different story that Samuel Scheffler, contemporary liberal egalitarian, gives us when he talks about the significance of the collective afterlife. Benjamin's suggestion is that it matters for the significance of meaning and meaning of what we're doing and how we're leading our lives that there is such a thing as a collective afterlife. It matters that people are coming after us. If we knew that an asteroid hits the Earth next week, or if we knew that procreation becomes impossible, babies born today will be the last generation, that would be of huge importance to our life projects, to the projects in which we participate. It would have huge emotional and motivational effects on us. But it's not just these emotional effects on us. Scheffler also identifies the mechanisms that underlie the effects. So he says many of our activities are goal-oriented activities, and they are choice-worthy only if we can expect there to be a collective afterlife. You're a medical doctor developing a cure for cancer. This makes sense only if there are patients to be treated in the future. Many of our activities, Scheffler claims, are relationship-oriented, right? I'm trying to maintain a social identity within the relations in which I participate. I want to be remembered as a certain individual, say, as a great parent, a great philosopher, and so on. And this, again, presupposes an afterlife, right? People coming after me who remember me for what I or who I was. And others of our activities are value-oriented. We try and preserve what is of value. Maybe we see ourselves in a certain tradition, say the socialist tradition. We continue this tradition, preserving what we think is of value. And this, again, only makes sense if there are people coming afterwards, after us, who also participate in that tradition. So this is why Scheffler believes the collective afterlife is actually of importance for the meaning and significance of many of the things that we do and that give meaning to our lives. He thinks this has a number of important implications. We see ourselves as parts of an ongoing history. It doesn't just matter that we experience value. It also matters that value persists over time. It turns out we are, for some surprising reasons, less egoistic than one may worry. The existence of others is actually of great significance for us, not only the existence of contemporaries, but only the existence of others in the future. So I think Scheffler is up to something, but I don't think he gets the picture exactly right. I think this collective afterlife that he is concerned with can play the role that he ascribes to it only if there's a certain relation between my action and action occurring once I no longer exist, a certain relation between my action and what happens in the afterlife. It's part of this idea that I value what I do. My action is significant, and I value not only that I do something, but I value also that others continue what I begin. So this is the intertemporal version of the idea of socialist action, first personal action with others, but others who come afterwards that I talked about in the beginning. You can look at the mechanisms that Scheffler identified to see why this is actually a plausible idea. There has to be a particular relation between what happens in the afterlife and my action as I intended it. Consider the goal achievement story, right? Developing a cure for cancer. If the cure for cancer is just an accidental byproduct of my current research, I don't think the relationship holds in the right way. What I thought was a dead end in research turns out to hold the key for the cancer cure. My current activity doesn't have the right relationship to what happens in the afterlife. It may also be that I managed to preserve my practical identity over time, but in mistaken ways. I'm remembered as a great philosopher, but not for the books I've written. Maybe the archives are messed up. They think I wrote Jan's book, right? And they remember me as a great philosopher because they think I wrote Jan's book. Nothing wrong with Jan's book, right? But I want to be remembered for the book I'm writing, not for Jan's book. Values without tradition, same story, right? So if I can promote the values that I care about and which are related to the tradition that I identify with, but only by dissociating myself from the tradition, say the tradition of socialism, that would also be deficient or problematic. Maybe I'd be more successful in promoting the values that I care about by not identifying with the tradition which has historically promoted these values. So I think what these cases illustrate, and the underlying mechanism illustrates, that the afterlife may actually fail to secure the meaning and significance of my current activity, even if they meet the Schefflerian conditions. So I think what matters is that my action figures in the right way in the afterlife, that my action is taken up in the right way by the afterlife, that I can see or expect or trust that others will continue what I have begun in the right way. So I think it matters that I see myself not only as part in ongoing history, but as an agent in an ongoing history, performing actions that others will continue, that I perform intertemporal socialist actions. Maybe building a cathedral is a good analogy. When I talk about this with German-speaking audience, I use the example of the Cathedral of Cologne. Right? It took 800 years to build the Cathedral of Cologne. But you could think of this as an intertemporal joint action. Right? The bricklayers laying the foundational stones of the Cathedral of Cologne did so in the 13th century. The roof tilers completed the cathedral at the end of the 19th century, 600, 700 years, extended joint action, extended socialist action. I was surprised to learn that the Cathedral of Notre Dame was built in less than 60 or 70 years, much more efficient in cathedral building. The French, it turns out, than the Germans. But then maybe the fire and the reconstruction also fits in, right? So in a way, by reconstructing the Cathedral of Notre Dame after it burned down a couple of years ago, you're completing what those originally building the cathedral a couple of hundred years ago, what they have begun. So I think it matters that our collective afterlife is not only a collective afterlife, but a socialist afterlife in the sense of they are completing the socialist action that we have begun. Those coming after us are not just beneficiaries of our action, the recipients in think of the cancer cure, but they are our co-agents, right? They are our intertemporal comrades, I think. So that was the puzzle about Benjamin and revolutionary redemption. Then there's Samuel Scheffler on the collective afterlife, which I think should be understood as the socialist afterlife. I think if you put the two together, Benjamin's attractive but puzzling story now seems to be much less puzzling. So I think just as building a cathedral is an intertemporal joint action, just as building Notre Dame or rebuilding Notre Dame or building the Cathedral of Cologne is an intertemporal action, so is liberation, class struggle, emancipation. It's a temporally extended joint action. And on this perspective, it matters that we perform emancipation, class struggle, liberation as socialist actions in the ways that I've sketched. It matters that we complete what the past has begun. So in a way, our struggle today is the socialist afterlife of those who came before us. And I think this Benjaminian idea of redeeming the past amounts to us taking up the struggle of the past and completing the struggle of the past. We're redeeming those who came before us by completing their struggle. And I think this idea of an intervention into the past, now that it runs via a temporally extended joint action, is much less confusing than one may initially think. So what about this idea of redeeming somebody who is already dead? Well, if performing a first personal action or a socialist action is important because it contributes to your self-constitution as an agent, it gives you freedom, it gives you self-knowledge, it gives you a practical identity. If it's important for these reasons, I think we can make sense of the idea that we're redeeming the past through completing the action that the past has begun, because it's only by completing that action that this original action actually turns out to be successful. And this is also where the claims of the past, I believe, come from. This is where they have their normative source. The reasons that we have to help others to achieve self-knowledge, to act rationally, and so on, are the reasons that we have to continue to complete the struggles of the past. These are these mysterious claims that Benjamin is talking about. This also explains the messianic power that he is talking about. We have agential powers, right? We can act in the world, we can do things. And using these powers, we can make it the case, or fail to make it the case, that those who acted in the past succeeded in their project. So this is the power that the present has over the past. We can complete actions that have begun in the past. And I think this idea of mutual redemption, that by redeeming the past, we're also redeeming ourselves, that's a perspective that also becomes less mysterious. Benjamin talks about the past being citable in all its moments. So in a way, by completing the action begun in the past, we are appropriating past action. It becomes part of what we are doing. What the bricklayers have done 700 years ago becomes part of the action that the roof tilers are performing today. By engaging in social struggles, class struggle in a certain way, the struggles of the past become our struggles. They become part of our action, to which we have a different kind of access than we have to stuff that is just happening in the world. So I think this is what Benjamin may have had in mind when he talks about the past becoming citable in all its moments. So I think socialists, contemporary socialists, should take that idea of revolutionary redemption and the significance of a collective afterlife more seriously than they currently do, and also try and figure out what that abstract idea would imply for understanding the idea of socialist emancipation. So here's what I think is, or I hope, is now more convincing than 20 or 25 minutes ago. I do think, without having argued for it, that the point and purpose of socialism is to make it possible for people to perform socialist actions, to act with others such that what we are doing is at the same time my free and rational action. I believe that socialist action is important for a number of reasons having to do with freedom, rationality, and self-knowledge. I believe that one should view class struggle, emancipation, liberation as a temporally extended socialist action, both diagnostically, the idea of a temporally extended joint action, but also normatively, it matters that it has the right normative pedigree. Think of the analogy of building a cathedral. With this in place, this idea of revolutionary redemption makes sense, I believe. We're redeeming by completing what the past has begun. And we should think of the significance of a collective afterlife as the significance of a socialist afterlife. The significance of our emancipatory action today depends on whether or not the future completes our emancipatory action today. So it matters that we perform emancipatory actions today such that it is possible for future generations to continue, complete the actions, the emancipatory actions that we currently perform. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.